No. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Oversharing Show after a 1 week break. Nice little turkey break for everybody.
Hiatus, perhaps. A little
low-atus, hiatus, you know, whatever. Some of us laid low, went high.
and yeah. Some of us were busy, like going to freaking 50 million activities.
Yeah. How dare they?
I'm so done.
Allegedly. I'm so done with what, Sharon?
Like too many activities in one day and in 1 week.
Yeah, it's rough.
It was a lot.
It's like you're spreading yourself thin over. It's like butter spread thin over toast. Sorry, I've been listening to Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
That was not a British accent. I'm sorry.
I feel like as if I'm
there you go.
I feel like butter spread too thin over toast.
There you go.
So I must
That's
go.
Better.
And I must steal my better. Ring with my finger. Ugh.
The butter is better.
The better, better. Oh, speaking of the Ring of Power, that'll bring us right into our quote.
Okay.
And we could overshare more too after this if we want also about our experiences. Anyway, today's quote is from The Kybalion. Mind, as well as metals and elements, may be transmuted from state to state, degree to degree, condition to condition, pole to pole, vibration to vibration. Theme, that's it. Pretty interesting, huh?
Transmutation, is that what it's talking about?
Yeah.
That's some crazy stuff. I like the topic.
It's and it says mind. Yeah. And I love how it focuses on mind and it puts that first mind is the first word in the whole quote. So it's like, this is important. And I really feel it goes back to what we've talked about before. And that's another kind of, it's a quote I got from The Kybalion where it talks about polarity. Or no, I mean, it talks about the pendulum. That's the other P word, shift. That we experience in this realm, things go from good to bad and bad to good as we perceive them. But it says that the master, although he can't escape the pendulum's swing, the master can learn to elevate to higher levels. And it's just about looking at it differently. And when they're doing that, they're actually transmutating their mind when they do that. And a simple example of that would be, you know, let's see, I was in the Marine Corps and I could look back and say, oh, they took advantage of me. And you know, I made like $800 a month to work like 18 hours a day in like the worst conditions ever, you know, but I could also say I picked up these great skills. And one of them was I used to safety wire all the time. You take this little wire, like metal wire, and there's holes in some of the sides of the bolts and you have to put it in and you safety wire it to an anchor. So this way the bolt doesn't come undone because the jets are vibrating insanely. So I used to do that for like hours. And then I learned that I could do it with jewelry. Like I make a little crystal jewelry. So I could look at it now, the skills I learned there and the experience I had to look upon them and draw from them instead of use them to victimize myself.
Indeed. Very good point.
There you go. And what we're going to do now is something that somebody actually suggested that we do. And we listen to our fans. So we're going to stop doing the show. No, I'm just kidding. So we're going to pull a card from the tarot. And it's since great. Sharon remembered, she actually has a deck, so she's going to pull it for us. So what'd you pull for us, Sharon?
Well, I have this little small deck. It's called the Everyday Tarot. Ooh. And I'm going to pull a card.
And this is the one that you used to do your daily readings with, right?
Yes. Yes.
Hence the name Everyday Tarot. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too.
Because it's very simple, so you don't get wrapped up in a lot of the big pictures and stuff. You know what I mean? Some of these cards you look at, and especially major arcana card, you're just like, wow, look at this card, like from the Thoth deck or something. You're like, well, look at this thing.
Yeah. But and this one's very simple.
Yeah, allows you to get a quick message. And it's kind of like, it allows you to get it in. You don't have an excuse. You know, you're like, you can get it in every day. It's like a little meditation. But anyway.
This is an appropriate card. And you'll tell us why. Or can you guess? Can you guess what it is?
The King of Pentacles.
The Fool.
Ooh. I would have never guessed that in a million years, but you're right. Yeah, that's a really cool. You know what?
I can't zoom it, but I mean,
Hang on. What I'll do is I'll make you the I'll pin you and then you can hold it up. There you go. All right, hold it up. Oh yeah. Yeah, I like that. And see what I mean by it's very simple. So you get the basics of the idea in it. So you have the fool on his journey with the dog behind him. The dog's kind of trying to give him a little bit of a warning. And the thing we always glean, because it looks like he's stepping off a cliff. But this is the thing, though. Is that a cliff? It's just the unknown, right? It could just be a shadow that we're not aware of because his other foot is that same color. So he's coming out of one shadow and to go to the other. He's like he's stepping over the what we would consider the reality that we know into the other world. And so that's really what it's all about when we're talking about looking at things in different lights. And I'm going to go back and unpin you because this doesn't make sense. Okay. So looking at a thing in a different light from a different point of view, and that's how you transmutate it, because the fool, that's what he's all about. It's about that journey. It's like the prodigal son, how he leaves, you know, he's like, I want my inheritance now, dad. For those aren't familiar, see, I just got to remember, right, to put some context to this. From the Bible, there's a story called The Prodigal Son. And I mean, most of us that grew up in church would be like, how do you not know the story? But of course, you know, for those who didn't, we will elaborate. And it's about this son who he doesn't agree with the ways of his father, like in the town. He doesn't want to stay around on the land. He's like, I just want my inheritance now and I want to go out in the world. So he goes out in the world and one of the other sons stays behind and works with the father. And then the other son that goes out in the world loses all his money, eventually parties, whatever it does, you know, they were kids. So they kept the story muted, but he probably just, you know, engaged in sodomy until he got rid of all his money, probably got AIDS, went to the moon, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. So he comes back from the moon, cures his AIDS. He comes back to his dad and is like, yo, I'm broke. I went to the moon, a lot of money. AIDS is expensive to cure. So I'm broke now. What do I do? And the dad actually embraced him with open arms, because now that he's back home, he got rid of that wanderlust. He got rid of all that, whatever it was in him. So in a way he healed himself and he was able to see that now, having gone, you know, he didn't recognize this place called home. So it's like a new place he began. So he's like the fool, kind of that zero journey. That's why I think it was put on the zero, because
the zero card.
It's the zero's like a circle, you know, it's just it's a direct cycle. Whereas like the lemniscate or the eight or infinity symbol is the same thing, but you don't see that it's a clear path because there's different windings on it. You know what I mean? So it's not as clear where this is like right in your face. So yeah. What do you think about it, Sharon?
Well, I mean, I think your story was very
relevant. Just for everybody, I like to put her on the spot because usually we plan things, but this one was like last minute. So
yeah. So thank you.
Gotta get out of that comfort zone.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, from what I know, and I know very little, I'm still learning a lot about the tarot, but from what I know, it's the first card in the major arcana. So it basically is telling the story of this person, this soul, because it's not really meant to be fool. It's actually supposed to be soul. But this soul is starting off on this journey. And so it represents card number 0 and also card 22. And so in essence, it represents the beginning of the journey and also can represent the end of the journey as well. So why I said it was an appropriate card is because this is the first time we're pulling a card ever. And well, not ever. I think we've pulled a card before, but like at the beginning of the show, I mean, so for it to appear the first time we decide to pull at the beginning of the show is kind of, you know,
very foolish,
relevant and very synchronistic, I suppose one could say.
Yeah.
So we're starting a journey of pulling cards. We're gonna try to remember to pull a card every show now from at the very beginning. So
yeah,
and for those read a quote if we can too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And for those who are unaware, Sharon and I both do readings. So if you'd like one, just reach out to us, contact us, and we can arrange that for you. So and we don't really do We don't really tell your future or like fortune tell, stuff like that. It's more about getting to know yourself, self-knowledge, symbolism, you know, stuff like that. Jungian analytics, you know, it's very, I keep it very based in this realm. I'm not woo-woo. You know, I'd like to talk about that stuff, but that's serious business to me when I'm talking about tarot and talking about somebody's life. So I don't like to just say, you know, I don't want to disparage anyone else, but I'm just saying, I don't say things like, oh, the spirits and all this stuff. I'm just like, listen, you know, this is the card. What do you think? And most people are like, wow. And they kind of get what the card's trying to tell them. I don't really have to do much. Yeah, it's great. So yeah, hit us up. But anyway, what are we talking about today, Sharon?
Well, over the last couple of episodes, we have talked about men and women, relationships between men and women. And we've talked about some of the issues and problems that can happen when people try to be in a relationship, like a romantic relationship, I should say. And one of the things that we wanted to touch on that is an issue for most people is drugs and alcohol. So that's what we wanted to talk about this time.
Yeah. Exciting topics of drug. And we're tackling the hard hitting topics. That's what we do here on the show. And over Sharon, we don't pull back the punches. And one of the things we want to do on over Sharon, because it is over Sharon, we want to talk about our own personal experiences, and we're going to do that first. So you guys don't even have to wait for that. Yay. Look at them in the chat. They're so excited. They're like, wow, more stories we get to hear. Yes. From Brandon's
crazy more oversharing.
Life. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the first time, like our first experiences with alcohol or with drugs or whatever. And so Sharon's going to go first though, and talk about, cause she, as you know, if you're a fan of the show, she has more of a sheltered lifestyle. As we like to say, she grew up under a rock and I grew up under a crack rock. So.
Yeah. So we're kind of opposites in that. Yeah. So as you know, I grew up sheltered. So there was no drinking allowed. In my household, my parents didn't drink and they frowned upon that sort of thing. So, but the thing was, I wasn't really one to drink anyway, in the sense I wasn't like necessarily drawn to it or feeling like I needed to. I didn't feel like my life needed that. It was just like, oh, okay. I mean, people drink. I mean, whatever. Funny thing is, I guess I can't tell you the first time I drank because I was probably a teenager. I didn't tell Brandon this one. He doesn't know this story.
Ooh.
I have a brother who was very like progressive. So he was not about to listen to the, you know, I should say, alleged authorities, you know, the church people that, oh, he shouldn't drink. So when we would go to, my sister and I would go to his house and hang out because he's older than us. He's like 12 years older than me and 14 years older than my sister. So he was already married and stuff and had a daughter. And so like, if we were at his house hanging out, whatever, sometimes he'd be like, you guys want milkshakes? I mean, he was always pushing the alcohol ever since we were able to drink, you know. I mean, you know, relative adult age, 16. I think I was 16 probably-ish. So that would make my sister 14. So he would make us malt milkshakes with Kahlua.
Ooh.
Yeah, they tasted really good. I mean, but they never, I mean, I don't think they got it. They weren't like, they didn't get us drunk. They just had like the flavor, you know, the flavor. So it tasted good. And we're just like, yeah, this is great. These taste really good. But I don't remember ever getting drunk or anything off of them. You know what I mean? He would make
Kahlua it's a liquor, but it's really light. Mild. I mean, most times you get like a white Russian, you'd have it with vodka. I don't know where that came from.
Vodka.
You would have it with vodka, my
comrade.
From Russia. where am I from right now? Yeah. So yeah, I think you probably all right with a little bit of Kahlua. You could get a little bit of a buzz, but yeah, you're not going to.
Yeah. I'm sure we didn't. I don't remember ever feeling like I got drunk or anything. Plus he would make each of us one and that was it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. He probably put it for the taste, and it's probably a good thing he did that, 'cause he's kind of like getting you used to alcohol a little bit, you know?
Right.
'Cause like when I was in Italy, and we can even talk about this later, but when I was in Italy, you know, in Italy, they don't care. Like anybody drinks, right? And even children have a little bit of wine with dinner, so they're not as you know, like when I was in Italy, when I was in the Marine Corps and I was at the bar, the only people who are getting drunk and out of control are the Americans, you know. All the Italians are, I mean, there's a few that got pretty crazy, but you know, it wasn't like it is here when you go to a bar. So it's just like an odd, like you can't drink, you're not supposed to, and then all of a sudden you can. So sometimes people who don't sneak around, like, you know, people like me who don't sneak around and don't drink. I would encounter this in the clubs a lot too. When I was a DJ, you get people that are like out away at college, away from their parents for the first time. And they're just like, you know, women and men, both just balls to the wall. Like, just, what do you got? Drinks, drugs, whatever. They're just doing it all. So it's like, yeah.
And I mean, that goes back to the discussions we've had about, like, if you like make something so bad, then, you know, you prohibit it, then it becomes like an obsession.
Ooh, a taboo.
A taboo. Ooh, exactly.
And then it becomes like a dark desire.
Yeah. And then an obsession over time, perhaps. So yeah, that was, I can probably say that that's probably the earliest that I probably had a drink. And so, I mean, and at the time, it's funny because at the time, I don't even know that I knew that Kahlua was an alcoholic beverage. It wasn't probably till like later, my brother's like, I'm just putting Kahlua in it, you know? And I'm just like, okay, whatever. That could be any sort of like mixer that is not alcoholic. I didn't know that it was alcoholic. So to me, I was just like, it tastes good. I don't care. So, so yeah, that was probably one of the earlier stories. And then as far as me, getting into more like drinking as an adult, because even in like in high school, I didn't, because I was so sheltered. I wasn't allowed to go to parties or anything like that. And then in college, I was kind of more of like a book nerd. The people that I hung out with, I'm sure they drank, but I just wasn't really drawn to it or really super interested. I don't remember like getting drunk or anything at a party or anything like that.
What school did you go to? Or did you go to like
the party school in Arizona, State University.
Oh, all right. So yeah, it was all around. Okay.
It was a total party school, but I was kind of just like, I don't know.
Somehow I didn't get it. And we'll talk about that later, but yeah, no, keep going though.
So it wasn't until I got out of college and started working. And at this place that I worked, before I mention that, I'm going to say like, I was also like a very frugal person. So like, and because I wasn't drawn to alcohol, you know, if I didn't need it or want it, I wasn't going to buy it. And like, you know, I don't, even if there were beers were like, whatever, a few bucks back then, like a Corona was like maybe $3 at happy hour or something. Who knows? I don't know. But I was just kind of like, I don't even like beer. You know what I mean? Just like, whatever. Like I had probably tasted it and been like, doesn't taste good. So like, not going to buy anything.
How old are you around this time?
Probably in my, maybe like late teens, early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. Like
to that same realization around that time too. That's why it's hilarious. But I drank a little more heavier earlier, but around that same age, I was kind of like done with it too. So it's funny.
Okay. Yeah. But then, so to me, it was like, I wasn't going to buy it for myself, but like, if somebody was going to buy it for me, then I will try it. You know what I'm saying? 'Cause then it's like, no, like I didn't have to put anything into it. So sure, I'll try it for free. You know what I mean? So I started working, and the company I worked for would have these, sometimes we'd have events where there was an open bar and stuff like that. So then those are the times I would partake. And then those are the times I would drink more than I usually drank. But somehow, and I'm guessing maybe it's because it's kind of maybe genetic or something, because my father's side of the family in Colombia, they can drink. And of course, I didn't know this until I visited them in 2006. That's the first time I ever met them. I got to kind of see how they were, and they were total, like, they would drink and party, you know, that's totally Colombian thing to do, you know.
Colombia.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
And allegedly. Yeah. So I have a friend who's Irish who says that I'm pretty much, I'm able to take the alcohol well. Like, I don't get drunk easily. So I guess I hold it my alcohol well. So, and she's Irish, so I guess I can trust her judgment. But so working at this corporation, we had these events where we would have pretty much access to as much alcohol as you can drink in a night, you know what I mean? Because it's an open bar. And so if you can keep drinking it, you can keep going to the bar and getting more until the bar closes or whatever. So those are the times I was like engaging in that. And then I would get drunk in the sense that I was past tipsy. You know, I was in the way, way tipsy, but I never got to the point where I was like trashed, like throwing up or anything like that. The furthest I could get was to get so tired that I'd be so sleepy that I'd fall asleep. Like, I don't know. That's all I can really say about that. And I'm trying to think, was there something else I wanted to say?
Were you going to talk more about work or anything, or cause you were there until we kind of,
yeah, I was going to say, we can talk about it a little bit later when we talk about, like another topic that okay. involves like,
cause you were kind of at when you were talking about your tolerance level basically, and then you went into like your heritage. So I don't know if there's more about work you want. I know we were going to talk about it later, but that's where you were at basically.
Yeah. I'm forgetting something, you. But
yeah, whatever. We'll overshare later. That's what 7.7 is for.
Yeah. We'll talk about more.
That's the best part about the show. There's no pressure. Cause if we forget about it, we'll just talk about it on the next one.
Yeah. So yeah, these mega corporations, like the one I worked for, gave you that accessibility to the alcohol. And I participated because of it. Whereas if I were to have to buy my own alcohol, because here's the thing, for me, I was kind of a noob with all that stuff. Like, you know what I mean?
So no, since I know, because when I was in Italy, just to cut you off really quick, when I was in Italy, I was 19 and there was no drinking age. So we'd go to the bar and I was on a ship for like a month. So I had all this money. You couldn't spend it at sea. So we get to Italy and you just look at the menu. You're like, yeah, I want one of those. I want a Mai Tai. I want a zombie. One of the, you know, and then before you know it, you're just like throwing up behind the place. But, you know, I mean, we were savages. Obviously, we were Marines. So, but I get what you mean, though. You're just like, yeah, what is all this fun stuff? And when it's free, because basically to me, it was kind of free because we were just buying each other drinks. Like I said, you know, we had like thousands of dollars in our account and we were just like, all right, you know, like,
yeah,
let's do it.
Like, yeah. So. Right. And so being a noob at a lot of this stuff, like I didn't know the difference between, you know, okay, well, how does beer taste versus liquor versus like what's the alcohol content of liquor versus beer versus a strong beer versus a light beer versus a dark beer versus wine Wine's a tricky one, right? Wine is tricky. And that's what I ended up liking. So I could easily get like tipsy on two glasses of wine. And then I'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll have more. And then it just escalates, you know, it's just, it's like to the point where you're not walking straight, you know? So when it was readily available and at the events that I had at work, it wasn't like mixed drinks stuff. It was mostly just beer and wine. So that's kind of some of the ways I got to learn about what my tolerance level was and like what I kind of liked versus what I didn't like to drink. But yeah,
it was a really good exploratory process for you.
Yeah.
And it didn't cost you anything. So that's good.
Yeah.
Just a few brain cells. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, probably.
Who knows? I don't even know. So yeah, that's, well, I have a few stories, and it's funny because while you were talking, I took some notes. Imagine that. Cause a lot of stuff came up for me. So, and one thing I wanted to mention was why I remember. So I told you, I'll tell you, like, to talk about what I talked about before, about how we kind of were feeling the same about alcohol around the same age. Right. So I grew up, drinking in high school and stuff. And then when I was in the Marine Corps, like I said, the first time we were in Italy when I was 19, it was like party time. Cause we were basically, you know, at sea for a few weeks or a month, and then we'd get off and have a couple weeks or maybe a few days on land. So we would just, you know, party it up. And we were nothing really to do because we still had to work. So we were in Italy working, and sometimes if we got to go to port with the ship, we'd actually have days off. That was really cool. Like when I went to Malta, that was insane. So, but after the cruise, I made some other friends and they weren't really into drinking. And I was feeling the same thing. Cause I started to feel like I would wake up and I would want to drink. And I'm like, wow, what the fuck is that about? Like, and I there was something about it that I didn't like. So I just stopped for a while. I was like, I'm going to stop this. And thinking about it more, it's probably because like I didn't have control. Right. Or I was feeling like I was losing control of the situation. Mm-hmm. And actually, that sounds like a bad thing, but it doesn't mean that it's really a bad thing. It was just my response to losing control scared me or whatever. It freaked me out.
It scared you into stopping and evaluating.
Yeah. Which is a good thing. But then Now I can look at why was I afraid of losing control? Right. So it's like another layer, but it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's not, but now I can look back and I could, you know, kind of look at that thing about because can like fear of having controls. At the end of the day, we don't have control at all. You know, like trying to control things is just it's like a fear of death kind of thing. So that's something I wanted to bring up. And then one of the youngest memories that I had that I thought of when you were talking was when I was, I can't remember how old I was, but I had teeth coming in.
No, you were little.
So no, it's not that, don't feel bad, but I was probably, whenever you get your last adult teeth. So I could have been like 5 or 6, right? Cause I think don't you still get teeth in? I don't freaking know.
Yeah. Not you're still getting teeth at 5 or 6 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, you know, it wasn't when I was like a kid, but I remember, I mean, it wasn't when I was like a baby. I mean, I mean, but when you're 6 in Soviet Union, you're only adult. You must have job.
Is hilarious. Just a side note. I have a 6-year-old nephew and he was at Thanksgiving this, you know, last week here at my house. And he said, cause we were telling him something. He's a very, like, he's like a man's man type of guy. And, we said something to him, you know, that had something to do with like being a baby or being young or being little. And he's like, I'm a grown man. You just kind of want to chuckle at that, but it was so cute. And no, I guess allegedly he tells his mom that all the time. He's like, I'm a grown man.
Good.
He doesn't like that. Yeah. He doesn't want anybody to baby him. Yeah. Like if he falls, he's like, I'm fine, mom. I'm a grown man. He's hilarious.
Dude, he's like, going to be a crusher if he can maintain that fucking outlook on life. Yes.
Already he's like, I'm a grown man. It's so cute.
Don't send that poor kid to school.
Well,
I'm just, yeah, listen, it's fine. It'll be a great, that's what, you know, we all,
it'll
went
be a
through.
Great experience.
We all went,
they're in Montessori it. School. So,
Yeah. That's light years ahead of what I had to go through with it. Remember was I telling you, no, I was telling Heather last night how we had a teacher. This goes back to six episode. Maybe we'll do a 6.66 and talk about this. I had a teacher, a female teacher when I was in seventh grade, she used to stand up in front of the class. And when she was talking, she would like subtly like rub herself. Single lady, you know, I went to Catholic school. She wasn't not a nun, but there was a few nuns there. So listen, I'll let you use your imagination. But anyway, it was creepy. And you don't have to. I meant the viewers, Sharon. Not you, Sharon. I would never tell that to Sharon. Talking to the viewers. You're under a rock. Virgin mind does not need to hear this. Plug your ears. I should do that. We should do that on the show. Like earmuffs. Share muffs.
Oversharing muffs.
Yeah. So in to confirm this, a friend I actually do readings for on occasion. I went to that school with her and we reconnected recently a couple of years ago. On and off we hang out. Sometimes we go hiking. She's a really cool friend. And she was like bringing that up to me. She's like, do you remember that? And I'm like, dude, I'm like, yeah, I remember now, but I kind of always thought that was maybe like a bad dream or like a movie.
Yeah, I know. You're like, I thought I made that shit up.
But for you to say that, I'm like, I guess because I think that some of the boys used to try to say something. And I remember one of the kids got yelled at by his parents. And I was telling Heather this and she's like, you got yelled at? I'm like, no, I'm like, I didn't even bring it up to my parents. I'm like, I didn't even care. I'm like, I was like, as soon as it was done, I was just in my own other world. But like, yeah. So, you know, like it, once the day was over, like that was done, I was already like in my free outside school time, but, that's how my mind works. but no, some of the kids I think did try to say something to their parents, like some of the boys, and they thought they were just being like perverts or whatever, or making it up. So that's how shit used like
nobody, messed up.
We went from like nobody listening to kids.
That's and bullshit.
It's not, and honestly, it's not even that bad. Like I'm not trying.
But still, it's
it was
weird.
Actually hilarious. Yeah, it's fucking weird, but it was hilarious. Like at least we weren't like fourth graders. Like we were just like, this lady's fucking whack. But yeah. So, but still, yeah. I mean, anyway, I was sidetracking that whole thing. But yeah, we could talk more about that and some of those stories. So the whiskey on the gums. I was teething, or I had some teeth coming through. Had some pain, and I don't remember who was there, but there's people standing around at my house. And that someone's like, this is what we used to do, like put whiskey on their gum. So I remember them putting a little, and I remember thinking to myself, like, wow, is this how people become alcoholics? Like, I hope
you were
I don't,
five and you were already thinking
six.
That.
Yeah. And I was like, I hope I don't like the taste. It wasn't, I can't remember if that was the exact thought, but that was the thought process that was going on. I was kind of like, if I like this, it might be bad. You know what I mean? And I remember it just tasted like rubbing alcohol or medicine, or I was just like, oh, whatever. It was weird, but I remember it was whiskey because I've tasted whiskey since, and I remember that taste from back. I mean, who knows? People say memory.
That's really good. That's a really good memory. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I think I was kind of like your nephew, like one of those, like, I'm just a fucking adult, because I would have adult conversations with people, like, you know, and so that was, let's see, I want to make sure that I got that story. What was the other alcohol story I was going to talk about? Let's see. I'm just looking at notes, everybody. Yeah. Okay. So in high school, I started drinking, I would say. Well, I remember we used to. So one of the early stories I could tell them or because it's synchronistically correct. But so I remember I think I was like in eighth grade or seventh grade. And I just got home from my teacher playing with herself. No.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. So I remember there was like some family party or something going on. And my cousin there, he was 9 years older than me. So he was probably in high school at the time. If I was like, or probably even out of high school, maybe I was younger. I can't remember. Maybe it was sixth grade, whatever it was. They had beers and they gave me one, like they were passing around. There was like a keg. So we were like drinking, and he's like, oh, if you don't want to get caught, you have to, He's like, the best way to not smell like beer is to eat peanut butter. He's like, you just take a scoop of peanut butter out of the jar. And he's like, it's better than breath mints or like toothpaste. And dude, I've used that like to this day, you know, like it's crazy. It works. I mean,
wow,
it doesn't work, but yeah, it's the probably the best things. I mean, at some point there's, you know, you're just breathing alcohol out, but like if you had a couple, you can eat some peanut butter allegedly and you'll be all right. So, yeah. So I remember that. And then I also remember, I think it was like an eighth grade party, but I was at, so I went to the Catholic school, like I said, you know, to be sheltered and watch teachers. and I had some friends that had crossed over and went to the public school, and we only had like four or five females in the class. So I was all about
ladies.
It was eighth grade. I say females. All right.
Females and males are for animals.
All right. There was like four or five young living women in that class.
Just women is fine.
I know, but it's funnier when I bust your balls. Your ovaries. So yeah, I was all about the public school and hanging out with them. So I was at one of those parties and there was like a beer. Somebody had a beer, a couple of beers, but there was people, I mean, this isn't that crazy because I had other friends that I knew of that I was adjacent with that were just full on, you know, drinking all the time at that age. I just was more in like a different pocket of it. And especially because I think it was the Catholic school that I went to, they really scare the shit out of you about drugs and about alcohol, they used to have the cops come in. Officer Daziel, I remember him. Oh man, he was a good guy though. He would come in because, like, honestly, I remember he came in one time and he would just tell, I think we were like third or fourth grade. He just told a story about how he would always go to this guy's house and all what he had to do. He's like, I have to help him get dressed and feed him and all stuff. And he just explained that he was an alcoholic and all he wants to do all day is go to the store and get, you know. So it was like a powerful thing for us to hear. I mean, maybe this is, you know, I'm not saying you should. Kids that age that you should subject them to that, but kids that age in the environment that I was in, yeah, fucking tell them these stories, you know, equip them with this knowledge, man, you know, so
equip them.
Yeah, dude. So it was great, but you know, so a lot of that, and then there was so much propaganda at the time about marijuana and all this other kind of stuff. So I started drinking earlier than I did, I think, with weed. And I remember when I went to eighth grade and then ninth grade to the high school, a couple towns away for high school. It was a Catholic school. And then after that, I went to the public school, which was like, right. Like I could walk to it. I could hear the football games from my house. I'm like, please just let me go to the school. Like I had to drive. I had to get up like 3 hours early. It was crazy. I didn't drive. I had to get driven anyway. So I ended up going there and then, you know, sophomore year, it was nuts. It was a crazy culture shock. I'd hung out with some of the kids before, but I started hanging out with like my friends and then some of the skater crowd. So they were smoking all kinds of stuff. So I started smoking these things they called beaties. They were like perfume, different cigarettes and other kind of stuff. I guess this guy, one of my friend's dad was a photographer and he had all these different kind of cigarettes from around the world for photo shoots or whatever. So he would just
kind of like flavored hookahs or something.
Yeah, probably. But they were cigarette form or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we would smoke those once in a while. And then, but we always had a friend that would drive to Bridgeport allegedly and get us 40s. He's like, yo, I'm getting 40s. And I had no idea what a 40 was. I just heard everyone's like, yo, we're getting 40. So I'm like, yeah, get me a 40. And then he was like, they're like $10. I'm like, sure, whatever. I didn't know. And like 40s are probably like $3, whatever. I was like 40s. And and then I got it. It was just this, you know, you could Google it, everybody, if you don't know. It's just like a big glass bottle of like the worst trash liquor. Probably had formaldehyde in it, like St. Ides allegedly used to say that. And we would just, oh, it was great. We would just drink it and be merry. It was great. And yeah, it was good times. And then I remember one of the first times I was actually offered real weed. I was 14. And I said, no, it was weird. Me and my friend, and there were two of us, and we both went to that Catholic school together. And then he ended up becoming like a terrible alcoholic after that. But I think he's better now. I won't say any names. Joe. No, I didn't go to school with any Joes. Yeah, I didn't.
It's always Joe.
But I said no. And I was like, wow. But then I went to Myrtle Beach to visit my family, and my cousin was down there who's 2 years older than me. Listen to this. Oh, I totally forgot that. Okay, so my mother was adopted. Her adopted father's sister had kids. They moved to South Carolina. Those kids had kids the same time my mom had kids. I'm sorry.
So they were like your cousins.
Yeah. Yeah. Like our cousins, right? Same, around the same age. So those, my great aunt's kids had kids, right? So in 1974, July 2nd, 1974, Brandy was born. July 2nd, 1976, 2 years later, Brandon was born, and they didn't even know each other. That was just happened to be named that way.
Funny.
And we reconnected a couple of years later. Yeah. So we used to go down there and visit them. And then when I was down there, Brandy was with a bunch of her girlfriends, and I was like this 14-year-old, like I just got contacts, and I was like, oh, you know. So they're like, you want some weed? And I'm like, I'll do heroin. Like, I don't, you know, like whatever they were passing around. It's a good thing it wasn't meth, because I wouldn't have any teeth right now. I was just like, sure. Like, and I totally like dropped it and like probably burnt their fucking, I was like terrible. It was great, but I totally, oh man, I forgot about that experience. But yeah, I'm glad I was able to share that. That was so funny. So that's when I started, and I was like, oh, this isn't what they said. I was like, you know, this actually helps me a little bit. Like it kind of, I don't know, it made life not as crazy, I guess I could say, is the best way to put it at the time. You know, it's crazy when you're a teenager.
And it was weed, you said?
Yeah. Yeah. Allegedly.
And you smoked like a whole joint, or what? How'd that work?
They passed around a joint. Yeah. Okay. So I probably had a couple hits. I don't even think I was really affected the first time, like you were saying. But this is the thing. I've started to get a different view on what that could be. A lot of people now, what we're talking about, just elaborate so everybody knows. A lot of people say when they first try marijuana or cannabis or whatever, they don't feel anything. So nothing, I think, happens. What it is, nothing happens. I think what happens is there's an effect there, but you just aren't able to perceive it yet because you don't know what it is. So I think something still does happen, but it's just not. It's not a full effect. And I think that it has to grease up the wheels a little bit, but yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway.
Yeah. So you had another story of your childhood when you were five and you were planting something.
All right. So now we're going to cross over a little bit and talk about marijuana, because we talked about it a little bit. So I recently had this memory come up again. I think I was about five or four. I can't really tell. And everybody, you know, who knows what memories really are. But this is a reoccurring memory that it's not like it just popped up to me now. I've thought about this a lot, and I've told this story because it's hilarious. Because they, in the 70s or 80s or whatever this was, because I was born in 76, they used to call weed, they didn't call weed, they called it grass. Grass. Like grass was the name for it. So when I was younger, I had a lot of cousins who were much older than me, because my dad comes from eight brothers and sisters, and he's the second youngest. So his sister had a kid like at the same time his mom was having a kid. You know what I mean? It was like everyone was having kids. So these cousins, and it was like, now when I tell you about my experiences, now when I hear the stories of these experiences, I have a cousin who had two older brothers, and he's older than me. He's probably a good 5-6 years older than me. And he was the youngest of his, you know, he had two older brothers. And from what I understand, I don't know who it was, I'm not going to make any claims, but from like the age of five, he was like fed alcohol, and he ended up in jail and, you know, on heroin and all this stuff. And it was terrible. And everybody, like one of my good friends I made when I got into motorcycles, when I was about 25, 26, I made friends with this kid from the other side of Milford, and I was talking to him, and I told him, I don't want to say the name, but because he doesn't have the same last name as me. So I told him that guy was my cousin. And he's like, that dude, your cousin? Like, cause he lived down the street. He knew who this guy was, cause he used to terrorize Milford. It was crazy. So, anyway, it's just, it's crazy how that all that happened. So anyway, my situation was a little different. So my parents were 19, 20. They were young when they had me, but they had a lot more responsibility than his parents.
Their baby's alcohol.
Yeah. 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 So, and again, it wasn't the parents that did it. They just weren't around, I guess. I don't know. You know, it was crazy. There was domestic abuse, allegedly. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on. So then this is, again, years ago, all those people. And this is another thing I want to say. Most of these people in these stories I'm telling unfortunately are dead. Like the cousin that I told you about the peanut butter, he died in a motorcycle accident when I was 16. So like these, you know, this lifestyle is crazy. And that's another thing that's going on these days with 2020, because if you add more despair into a lot of people living these lifestyles, it's just like adding fuel to the fire. And you see more things like motorcycle accidents and all these other deaths that it doesn't seem like would be part of what's going on with, I'll say, the lessening of our liberties, right? The lessening of our liberties. But I could make the claim, I think it's directly due to that. So, but anyway, and I'm sure you agree.
Yeah.
But so the particular, I was going to say the particular story I was talking about though. So I was about five years old, and I was hanging out with some of these cousins. They were probably babysitting me, and they had basically garbage bags full of all this stuff. And I'm like, what is this stuff? And they're breaking it up. And I wanted to help, because I'm like, so can I help? Like, what is this? They're like, oh, it's grass. And they're like, you just got to take out all the seeds. You got to separate it and take all the seeds. So I used to collect all the seeds in a box. And I remember going outside.
For them or?
Well, you... so I would separate it off and help them, you know, break it up. Like they weren't making me do it. I was asking.
Right. No,
to
you
do
wanted.
It.
Yeah.
I'm just clarifying for everybody there too. It was like they were putting me into the drug trade. It's hilarious. I was just bored. I was like, I want to help. Like always.
It's
I always want to
help.
I just want to help.
Just
want
to help.
So if you have any weed you need help broken up, I'm an expert. I have 40 years experience. Allegedly. So that's why I'm wearing the sap for this episode. It's great. So I would collect all the
speaking of that, just to interrupt you real quick.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
I was at a non-bear event, like I don't know, sometime this past week, and I said something about allegedly or something like that, and somebody was like, I like that, allegedly. And I was like, yeah, a couple of my friends have hats written with allegedly and t-shirts that say that. They're like, that's cool. I didn't tell them what it was about. I just told them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. And if you want one of these, it's from Owen Benjamin. Go to unbearablesmedia.com. I'm pretty sure Unbearables merchandise or something. Just go to owenbenjamin.com and you can find it from there. But yeah, these are awesome. They have hoodies. And you really don't even have to be a direct fan of Owen Benjamin or his comedy.
It's just a funny word.
Everybody loves
like everything
hat.
Is allegedly like
everybody, especially
unless you have like firsthand, unless you're a firsthand witness of something, like it's all alleged.
Yeah. Like since the days of Bill Clinton, at least, you know, I do not have sex with that. It's like allegedly. Yeah. So there I was, Sharon. Back to my story. There I am.
Please.
Breaking up weed. Estella. I was Killa. I was the what's his name? Heisenberg. I was the Dr. Heisenberg. He's the guy that cooked meth in that show Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
Of my time of breaking up weed of 5 year olds. So I collected all the seeds and I remember going outside. And I see this is the thing. I remember the house. Specifically, it was my grandparents' old house. My grandfather had already passed away at this point, and my grandmother was not around. She had my parents move in because my parents were living on their own. My dad like always worked, you know, he always provided. But my grandmother, who was my mom's mom, after her husband died, she was kind of losing it and like needed help. So my parents moved there, and then before long, my grandmother went to a hospital for a while, just saying that. Allegedly, for mental reasons. So, there I was, and I remember that outside the side door that led out of the kitchen, there was a giant, there was like a pretty big concrete slab patio that my grandfather made. It's like this big, it was probably about 10 by 8, you know, 10 feet by 8 feet. And on the other side of that, between the neighbor's house, there's a patch of grass, and I was there planting all the grass, and I used to water it. So yeah, see, I've been growing weed since for 40 years. I don't think anything ever came of it. I remember grass grew, so I thought I had grown that.
You're
grass.
Like grass, yay!
Yeah, Farmer B. Wow, I didn't realize that my first crop was actually grass. And probably because I watered the actual grass that was there, it grew better. But yeah, so that was my first experience with that, and I figured everyone would find that pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. But you wanted to also talk about the perhaps that there are reasons for the easy access to alcohol.
Yeah.
Especially like in the military for you and like for me at conferences.
Yeah, because well, when you were talking about the conference and stuff earlier, when we were discussing this, it reminded me of being in the Marines. And I think I'd even talked about this before. But so when I was on the carrier, like I said, a year later, so I was on the carrier for 6 months and then I spent a year back in North Carolina. So that was like 96. So I was back for most of 96. And then in early 1997, we went to Aviano, Italy Air Force Base, which is an American Air Force Base in Italy that we still hold from World War II, allegedly. So obviously, it's not a hostile holding. They love having us there. But so I spent 6 months there.
Americano.
Americano.
Caffè americano.
Parla le italiano. Parla le italiano.
Bambino.
Bambino. Tutti frutti.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti. Prego.
Prego. Grazie. I'm just kidding.
Pizza.
Go on. Pizza.
So I spent 6 months there. It's funny. I was listening back on Hanging with the Bears, and I said I spent a year in Italy, and I'm like, I wish. It was kind of a year, but it was unbroken. But so I was there for 6 months on an Air Force base where basically we had weekends off. Unless there was something going on. And, you know, it's funny because we're talking about alcohol, so I might as well tell this whistleblowing story, everybody. The first weekend we were there, since I had been there before because I was there off the cruise, we had new guys with us that hadn't been. And so me and a guy that had been there before were like, we're going to rent a car. And a couple of guys were like, yeah, let's go. We want to go check some stuff out. So we were going to go drive to the city that was about an hour and a half, 2 hours away that we'd been to before with the carrier because it was like crazy. So we rent this car and we're back on base hanging out. And then all of a sudden this alert goes off. It's like a Friday night. Everyone's drinking and partying. An alert goes off and they're calling everybody. Now, usually what happens is I think it was a third or a quarter of the force, like whatever it is, had duty. So they couldn't leave the base. They had to stay on base. They can't drink, but they could hang out. And most of them drink anyway, right? So, but the problem was it was the first weekend off. So people were just scattered. So they couldn't find all those. So they were just grabbing everybody. So me and my friends were like, we got the fuck out of there because we had a rental car. We're like, they don't really need us. I worked on ejection seats. There's like six more of me drunk and, you know, whatever. Anyway, so we took off. And then later we find out that there was no sober air crew, allegedly. And the air crew are the guys, the officers. You know, that fly.
They had to fly. They had to fly a plane.
Drunk. And it's not that big of a deal because one, they get pure oxygen. So I heard them talking about it later and they said, yo, once we hit that oxygen, well, they didn't say, yo.
They're back to normal.
They're like, once we had the oxygen, we were fine because they were pretty nerdy. I mean, I'm a nerd. But so, yeah, it's not like they think they're Top Gun. It's so funny. I'm like, oh, it's great. You just, if you feed that ego to anyway, I did really well in the Marines, guys, really well, especially once I shaved my head. Oh, it was crazy. So, yeah, they were talking about the alcohol. So also that reminds me of another story because I worked on ejection seats. So anytime we pulled out, obviously we had to pull out the ejection seats every once in a while and fix them. So we got to see everything underneath. And usually like you can't have anything that's unsecured or whatever hanging out in the cockpit because they fly upside down and stuff gets caught and there's wires under the seat that actually control because it's all, I mean, these planes are, you know, I think ours are from the 70s. So it's all wire. It's not like remote or whatever. So if a pen fell, for example, or a wrench, it could get lodged in there and screw up their controls. So they took it very seriously. They're supposed to, but one time we pulled a seat and there was an orange. Because every time there's missing something, they're supposed to tell us and we had to look for it. We're like, oh, an orange. But they said they used to find roaches back in the day before they used to drug test people. They would find like half gross joints.
Probably looking for that orange.
No. Like, I don't, oh, not like, oh, a cock, yeah, like a joint. Like like a cannabis cigarette. Yeah. Okay, so they were up there like smoking weed. I don't know the terminology. They had oxygen up there and they were smoking weed. Dude, they could have blew themselves up. But anyway, so.
Oh, Jesus.
That, yeah, I wouldn't even attempt that fun feat. So, but back to the what was I remember?
Accessibility of alcohol.
Oh yeah. So when we were on base, though, we were living. So the there was the Air Force Base, and there was the official side of the Air Force Base where they had like all the stores and all like the administrative buildings and like where the Air Force lived, like the personnel. And it was all nice, like dormitory style, looked like hotels kind of almost. And then there was another side down a couple miles away where they had the flight line, where the actual runway was, and they had all the support and the hangars and stuff. And they had a tent city where all the Marines lived. So we had these giant tents or like prefab cottage things, but it was actually pretty awesome. I mean, I like thinking back, I used to put up signs. Oh my God. I was such a dude. So remember I told you I had been there, and halfway through, some of the people had gotten in trouble at renting cars. So then they said that unless you were a corporal, that you couldn't, which is an E4, and I was an E3, and I should have been an E4, but the way that our job was, they weren't promoting our specific job in that whatever it was. So like there was other people I'd gone in with or that had been in the same time that were like corporals and sergeants, but it's because their chain of command and their job and their MOS, it was just moving up a lot more. So anyway, so I was stuck at this level. So they basically said I couldn't drive. And I'm like, so I freaked out. So I made this top 10 list of things that like Lance corporals couldn't do. And I copied it and I put it on everybody. I even put on the sergeant major's thing. And like after that, they pulled it down and they changed it and they made like an exception. Oh yeah, dude.
For you?
Yeah. It was for some of the Lance corporals that had been there like longer.
Okay.
Yeah. Dude, it was. I did this in the Marines. Like I had no fear. I did not care. Yeah. I was just like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh wow, I can't believe that's crazy. So anyway, but anyway, so on in this area where the tents were, they had this one tent called the Fest Tent, and it was short for festivities tent, I guess. So it was like this big picture, like a tent you might go to at a giant wedding or something, right? It was like a really big tent, and it was even bigger than that, and it had like arcade games in it. It had a store where you can, and it was open 24 hours. You can go buy there, you got buy all the snacks and candy and stuff you want, and like food, you can buy Hot Pockets. So we were always there eating Hot Pockets and microwaving them, and beer, right? And soda. And the beer was flown from America, because in Italy, if you get a Budweiser, it just says Bud on it and it tastes different. But we had the stuff from America, all of it, Corona, Foster's, Budweiser, like big cans of Corona, big cans of Foster. People know what I'm talking about, like the Foster's that comes in the big can. That's Australia, mate. And yeah.
Australian for beer.
And I remember the Fosters.
My terrible accent.
Yeah. Australian for beer. Because our CEO would come in once in a while and buy cigars and beer for everybody. It was great. He was awesome. And but the beer was the same price as the soda. It was $3 for a six pack of beer or soda.
Terrible. Terrible.
So you could, it's like, it was like a crime to not, you know, and again, at this time, I didn't really drink that much. So I would on and off engage in it. And mostly when I was out in town, I would just like have one or two, because one of the clubs that we went to, I think when you, the cover charge was like $10, but you get a free drink. So I would always have like one or two and it was good, you know, but I wouldn't sit. And so what I was saying was I would go and I would see this and I saw this and I was like, wow, what they're doing is, or what's happening is, they're getting most people to just stay here on base and drink instead of rent cars and go willy nilly and go crazy all over Italy, which they have the right to do if they want. So they were just making them from their own free will choose to just sit there and medicate themselves. It was really ingenious, actually. I was kind of like mad about it, but what am I going to do? These guys aren't going to leave anyway. So, yeah, I just didn't partake. You know, I still ate all the Hot Pockets I could fit in my mouth, but.
Yeah. And why do you think that it was so accessible? What do you think?
I think it totally had something to do with, they realized at some point, and this goes back to alcohol, you could just look at why it's been introduced into some civilizations and cultures and societies by other people, because a lot of people, if they're at a certain point in their morality, they just kind of will let the alcohol run their lives and they just will sit there and drink on the base all day instead of go out and engage in trouble. And they know they can kind of keep them docile. You know, they still will drink and get rowdy and, you know, cause there was a bar on there too. So they could still, or even go
but
to the
they'll
bar
do
in
it
town
on base. So they're not on out base. There.
Exactly. And they'll maybe rough house or whatever, but it's all there and everyone knows each other and it's all, you know, can be controlled, which is actually smart because if you go out in town, listen, I know some guy that was, when I was there the first time, dude, this guy hooked up with a girl that was in the Navy that was there. And then the next day she was talking about, she got raped and all this stuff. And the dude, I don't think that was the case, but hey, that's just my opinion. Okay. So I'll just move on from that. But anyway, the guy went to Italian jail and like, we never heard about him again. We're like, hey, what happened to that guy? Like the CEO and stuff knew what happened, but he went to Italian jail. We were like, oh, that can happen. So yeah, from that point on, I was kind of like, ugh. So yeah, you gotta, so that it was kind of smart for them to do it. Although it's at the expense of, you know, whatever drinking does to you all the time. And also, think about this. I got to go see things that I'll may never see again. I thought at the time, like, oh, I'll always come back, but I still might as well go see what I can. You know, I'm like, I'll probably come back, but I haven't been back since, you know? So who knows if I'll ever make it back, but I'm glad that I got to see the things I didn't have those experiences. So, and I tried to get some people, I'd be like, dude, it's so awesome. I'm like, come with us. We're going to the beach. Like they're topless beaches, man. Like it's crazy. People are so fun, but yeah. It wasn't like a wild sex party though. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, I did hook up with a few women when I was there, but it wasn't that crazy, but it was just a fun environment and all the food, like you go, we're at this beach and it was in the North Adriatic. I think it was called Bibione. One was called Bibione and one was called Lignano. And they're on the Adriatic, which is off the Mediterranean. And you're like walking in this beautiful little Mediterranean town, and you sit down at like this little hole in the wall restaurant. It's like the best pasta you've ever eaten in your life. Like the cheese that like you'd kill for, you know? Yeah. It's like, so just amazing experiences and wine, you know, you have a little bit of that. I don't know if I drank wine back then. I'm trying to think, but anyway, yeah, it was all a good experience to have, but then it's because I chose to stand out and go out and do things. So I can't say that they were really victimized, but it does seem to be a very, it does seem to be very effective at what it's meant to do.
Yeah. Why let's just talk about like, alcohol, the accessibility of alcohol in the workplace, like not in a workplace, but in the sense of a work after hours activity or something like that. What are your thoughts on why that is something that, you know, the company would pay for or whatever? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it has a lot to do with the same, you know, I don't think it's a direct, like people in charge realize they're like, hey, let's get these people drunk every once in a while to keep them docile and stuff. But I think that, the fact that it's so prevalent in our society and it'll get more people to go there. And then while they're there, it's going to kind of like release people's inhibitions and make them feel better about themselves. And then they're going to associate that with their brand, you know, with that company.
Or like a reward maybe for.
Yeah. Reward. And then as they get this good feeling, because you know, when you're drinking and you're having fun, you're getting a good feeling. You're going to associate that with that brand, with your company. You're like, wow, they're so cool to have us do this. So
yeah.
And they are, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it is a cool gesture to do, but it's these, it's like bonding. It could even be kind of like trauma bonding at some point, because it depends on your connection with alcohol. Because if you have a problem with it and you overshare a little too much in a bad way when you're on it, not in the wonderful way we do here on this show, it could be triggering for you, you know? So yeah,
I'm drinking water, folks.
And I'm drinking straight vodka.
It's a clear liquid in here. Ooh. You don't know what it is. Right. Just kidding. But yeah, that leads to the next topic of, like, you know, there's this whole, like, almost like, polarization of do it, drink, and or don't do it, it's bad. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that it depends on your connection again with that substance. Some people I've seen that can have one drink and they just, their eyes roll back and they become a different person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suggest that they drink. I see other people that just drink too much because it's kind of like there's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they're drinking at a moment when, and then they have a problem clearly, but I feel like sometimes it could be healed. So I think that
it's like escapism. It's like something to do because you're bored or you don't know what else to do. And it's.
Yeah. And if you can say maybe there's a trauma in your life that happened that's causing you to escape into this drinking. If you heal that, then I feel that maybe you could give it a go again and drink when, you know, have one with dinner once in a while or when you're out with people to make it where it's something where it's actually enhancing your experience. So, but again, these aren't judgments, man. Do what you got to do to get by is what I'm saying. But that's why I don't think it's always all bad. And again, even if it is an indulgence and it's like too much and you're feel like your life's out of control, I think that I'll just say the people who I've seen overcome, like I have a couple of friends who've overcome heroin addiction, a couple of friends who've overcome alcoholism, and most of them, it's because they got scared about something happened, or they just got disgusted with themselves and their behavior and they just couldn't do it anymore. Like me with the sex, I was just like, oh, this is, I'm gay, you know, like I just felt weird. So, and that's the true motivation, because then there isn't that lingering doubt all the time. And if there is, then it's like, if you want to try to become a vegetarian, Ram Dass had the story where he's like, I was a vegetarian, but he's like, I felt like I was phony holy. He's like, so I just had to go and engage and eat a bunch of General Tso's chicken or whatever it was, or spare ribs. So, you know,
General Tso's chicken.
Yeah. I think he said spare ribs. I love that one, but yeah. So it's kind of like you do that because in that, then you get it out of your system and there's not that lingering doubt and those lingering desires and whispers. You could, when they come, you're just like, no, I remember I hated that. It sucked. You know, like, so, I mean, it doesn't always work. You fall back in, you get back out. It's a cycle. It's a loop. Allegedly. That's what this is all about. But that's why I don't like to just demonize it and say it's all bad, you know, especially if you make your own. What if you make your own alcohol? Like with coffee, for example, I don't grow my own beans. I wish I can get to that point, but I get my own beans and grind them and stuff and boil water and purify it and then boil it. So it's kind of like a, you know, so it's, that's what it's all about. It's what you're taking out of it, you know,
like everything in moderation.
What's it do? Yeah. Yeah. Especially moderation.
Yeah. But you were always, you were also saying that it's, like you can use these things as a tool, drugs and alcohol, because they can alter consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the big reasons why they are demonized so much in the society, especially what we would call drugs, because they could lead you to look at this world in a different way, and they could cause you to put value on things that you used to not, and then to not value things that you used to.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people did that, it could disrupt society. You know, it could, if you think about the idea of what money is in a fiat currency, at the end of the day, it's just a belief that we all hold, because it really is just paper and cotton blend, right? And with some ink on it and a little strip, and you can't eat it, you know? So we just all decide it has some value. So if one day we all didn't, or enough of us decided that it didn't, then it wouldn't, and it would be catastrophic. I'm not saying I want that to happen, right? It could be catastrophic. I don't know. I'm just saying. But what I mean is, in that same way, if enough people open their eyes to, because we always talk about the world and how
the world,
it's just an inversion of nature. So a lot of, and people believe that it's nature, so they align their behavior with the ways of the world and try to excel in that world instead of excel in the world of nature. So I think if with a lot of these plant medicines, I guess you could even say, although they can easily be abused, I think that people can start to open their eyes. And if enough people do, some people might be worried about their power. And it comes back to, like we said at the beginning, it's about control. There's people on top that want to maintain control. And I feel like there's other people that maybe want power, and they will introduce these psychedelics into society because they know it'll splinter off a certain amount of people that'll see something. But maybe they're not quite ready to deal with what's inside, but they know this world isn't what they thought it was. So now they're going to go, oh, now I got to go see the spiritual teacher and meditate all the time, because there's something there. you know, and then that could be another trap too. So that's why I don't always recommend all this stuff for people. But again, I don't demonize it either, man, you know?
Yeah. We can probably end with just ending with the discussion about weed and how it has, it's starting to become more available. And like you were mentioning to me, it was becoming more available in blue states that are making it legal. And you were comparing it to the tough lockdown laws.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because it seems that like Massachusetts and Connecticut and New York and stuff are going for legal weed. And they're the places where this lockdowns, whatever the rules are, the nonsense rules are the most nonsensey. And I feel like I came up with the thing. It's kind of like you can have freedom of movement or you can have freedom to explore your consciousness, but we don't want to give you both. You know, how dare you? Like, pick you could go to Florida and you could like make out with everybody and fucking party and put it on Instagram. But I don't think weed's legal. I don't know. Maybe it is down there, but I'm just saying like, it's definitely looked upon differently down in Florida because I've been there. So I know. And then it is, you know, like in Colorado or, and I'm sure the lockdowns are pretty crazy in Colorado. So, yeah, it's just an interesting observation that I had, right? I'm not making right. any claims here, anybody.
You wanted to also talk about the scarcity of resources, involved or, you know, revolving this topic, if we could say yeah. it that way.
And again, to reiterate, even though I am smoking a spliff right now with organic tobacco and a little bit of cannabis, allegedly
organic cannabis, just kidding.
Oh, maybe they probably use human shit to fertilize it. I hope so. But the tobacco is organic. So yeah, I want to say that I'm not like an advocate for weed, or I'm not a proponent, like I'm not against it, obviously. I just think that everybody has their own path to tread. Now, I shared some experiences, right, of shit that I went through when I was younger. And then Sharon shared some of her experiences. And if you're smart and you can realize, you could see that Sharon hasn't leaned upon these things as much as maybe I have, right? So it might have something to do with that. So that's why I don't say everybody should just run in and just experiment with their consciousness. There's other ways to do this, to do work and to do stuff like that. I mean, if you're feeling compelled to do it and it makes you like you feel it enhances or it works for you, then do it, you know. But there's people, I feel there's people in the middle that are into like what we talk about, but they might not be into like weed and they might be, I don't want them to like feel left out or something. I don't know. It's a weird way, but you know, it's like, just do you. I don't judge anybody, man. You know, like I said, I had a friend that did heroin. Like he would hit me up for money and I didn't know at the time, but then I kind of got a feeling that he wouldn't always hit me up for money. Like once a month, he'd be like, hey, you got like $25? And then he would pay me back. But then I realized what it was for, but I still, it's like, if I don't give him the money and if it's like,
he'll find it somewhere.
Yeah. And it might be even a worse way to do it. And I like, I don't know. And he could always come over and talk to me about things. And like I said, he got scared and it was about his kids because he has kids. He's still married and stuff. And he didn't want his kids to grow up without a dad because he had a dad that was like an alleged piece of shit. So that's really what it was. And he just fucking woke up and now, you know, he's crushing. And he got out of rehab like late February of 2020. So right in the midst of this fucking crazy wave of shit. And he still maintained, man. He was like, nope, I'm done. So
good stuff. For him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you were wanting to talk a little bit, or at least to touch a little bit on how hemp was going to take over as the next commodity, but something about the paper industry and William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah, so the story goes, as I know it, basically sometime in the 30s, the 1930s, hemp was set to take over as the next cash crop. because there's some invention made, I believe it's called the decortigator, that allowed people to process hemp much easier and to make it into fabrics and ropes and stuff, because they still used hemp for all this stuff, but it just took a lot more labor. And since they got rid of slavery or whatever the heck that was, hemp kind of fell out of use as much. It was still used, but so there was some interest allegedly with William Randolph Hearst. He was this guy who ran a bunch of newspapers, and he also owned a bunch of stock in paper, physical paper, and trees and lumber yards and stuff. So he set about the smear campaign, so the story goes, and demonized, they called it devil's lettuce, or I think that's where marijuana came from too, or something like that. And they said it was like the Mexicans were coming up over the border. And I think they even had like illustrations like Mexicans raping. How dare they?
How dare they?
Right? Yeah. See? And so that's kind of, and then when they went to first make it illegal, they basically were just putting a stamp on it, like a stamp tax. So you had to go down and get the stamp on it. And people really didn't know. So the story goes, like, they weren't really paying attention, I guess. So it's really their fault. But the way it was sold to them, it wasn't like hemp they were getting rid of. It was just evil marijuana, but they lumped it all together. And so you had to get a stamp. And what they did was they just slowly starting, or I don't even know if they slowly did it, but from what I hear, it was immediate, but who knows? They just wouldn't give the stamp to people. They said you needed to have it to get the stamp. And then when they bought it, they got arrested for possession without having a stamp. It was like this loophole that they did. They tried that with guns before too, stuff like that. They tried. But anyway, so that's kind of how it became. And then later in like the 60s, all this crazy stuff happened and like federal legislation got passed and stuff. But that's basically the story of how it became illegal.
But you were also saying that hemp was kind of a bad word.
Yeah, I remember growing up. Yeah. I think the first time I heard about hemp, people were talking about like clothes or whatever made out of hemp. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's like weed. So I thought it was like the same thing, because again, it's just left so
vague.
Vague. Yeah. Great.
Right. Word, yeah. I mean, I experienced that too, because when I was first hearing about stuff like, oh, it's made out of hemp. And I'm like, okay, well, and they're like, yeah, it's like related to the marijuana plant. And I'm like, okay, so what makes it different? You know, and, you know, to this day, I'm not quite exactly sure, but I'm assuming it's just because of the evolution of the plant that's been split, you know, it's been split up into different variants. And so like one variant is high in THC, another variant is high in CBD, another variant is for making paper and clothes, and who knows, like there's probably tons of variants.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's like a real quote unquote miracle crop, because you could eat it. You could clothe yourself with it. You can even make hempcrete concrete and make like structures out of it and live in it, you know, and our forefathers allegedly all grew it, and it was like a main staple. And then somehow people, because I believe they just got disconnected from the land, they were just able to be easily hoodwinked, you know. And that's just a testament to learn from your history, you know, be connected to your land, because then you can't be lied to so easily. If you're growing hemp, then you're going to be like, what are you talking about, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's people in those cities, damn it.
Yep. So the sun is pretty much gone down.
Oh yeah. Here. Wow. Look at you. It's getting all dark
now.
Darkness is spreading.
Yeah. But we can probably wind this down. And do you want to tell the people what we're going to talk about next episode? Maybe.
Yes. Just I think we shall, because my first experience with psilocybin mushrooms was in about 2014. And I remember I was listening to Joe Rogan.
And mine was like last week.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly.
And I was listening to a bunch of Joe Rogan at the time. And I really was digging what they were saying about the self-exploration part about it. So I got together. I was doing comedy. I was doing stand-up, like open mics and stuff and shows. And, you know, like 5-10 minute sets here and there. I think the longest set was like a 25 minute set one time. That was crazy. But, so, you know, I'm doing all this stuff, hanging out with other comedians, and one other comedian had done it a bunch. He like went to college and stuff. And he had like a real like job at a bank, but he also did comedy. It was really funny. And he did it every like once a year now. That was his thing, just to like keep his mind straight, he said. And then another friend never did it at all. So one night, and I think it was like October, really nice night. We had gotten some mushrooms and we all took about an eighth. And if you want to hear the rest of the story, you have to tune in next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it was a really amazing experience. I saw a lot of really cool things, and it'll be a fun story. So stay tuned next week for the Oversharing Show, where we talk about how we allegedly experimented with different plants.
Yeah. Mushrooms.
Yeah. So what do we say to the fine people, Sharon, before it gets too dark over there and we can't see you?
That if you're not oversharing,
then you're totally not caring.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, guys. And thank you to everybody in the chat. We really appreciate you so much. Make sure you thumbs up this. You like it, share it around, overshare it. Comment below. Let us know what you think. And because, you know, when you comment, sometimes we listen and sometimes we pull tarot cards in the beginning. And sometimes they're the fool. Bye.